How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
May is Maytag Month, and Menards is passing the savings on to you. You need reliable and energy-efficient appliances to conquer the day. Menards is your one-stop shop with appliances in stock and ready to take home today. Check out our top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Save big money on Maytag appliances at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5, the game on this Tuesday morning. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Nate and TD. Yep, that's the show Friday nights at 6 o'clock. Come hear it right here on ESPN 102.5, the game. They debuted that this past Friday, and we've got half of that crew with us right now. Nate Washington, former Titans wide receiver, is on the line with us. Nate, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How you guys doing?
Doing fantastic. How did everything go, the debut show, and how's everything going on your end these days?
Oh, man, things are going great. I think the first show was amazing. Me and TD are trying to, you know, find our chemistry, but I don't think it would be difficult. We kind of both get into some of the same things, have some of the same ideas about, you know, a lot of things that are going on, not only in the NFL, but in the world today. So I think it creates a great dialogue. I think we have some good things going and ahead of us, and we're definitely looking forward to the rest of the season and giving people great content.
Well, you shouldn't be a stranger to trying to have chemistry with somebody. You, as a former receiver, always were trying to get chemistry with whoever your quarterback was.
And trust me, I had enough. It was enough. You know, I had enough of them there. So I'm used to making sure that even if there's just one day to prepare, we're going to make sure we give the best performance we possibly can give.
I remember that Monday Night Football game. I think it was your last year here. I think so. That would have been, what, 2014? The Monday Night game against the Steelers. Didn't you have that big bomb down the left sideline, what, an 80-yard touchdown right before the half?
Yes.
Against your former team?
Yes, with my guy Zach Mettenberger.
I was gonna quiz Willie and Chase if they could remember the quarterback. Yeah, the Met Show.
Yeah, man. You know, it was a journey, man. I think we had some great guys throughout my time. Unfortunately, we couldn't find any stability. But throughout the time, you know, you had a lot of great potential candidates to come in and do some great things. Unfortunately, we weren't able to be consistent, I don't think, as we wanted to be. But as you stated, man, there were some great plays in there, just as the Steelers play that we had right before half.
So let's get caught up. It's been a while since we've talked to you. So what are you up to these days? I know you've been out of the league now for a while. So how's life after football going for Nate Washington?
Oh, man, life is going good. You know, just trying to settle into, you know, the regular world. You know, playing football and being a professional athlete, you know, it's definitely a fantasy world. You kind of encounter and endure some things that you really don't have to take care of in the regular world. But being here today and having the opportunity to kind of invest in myself and to my family, you know, it's definitely been a breath of fresh air. A lot of things have changed in my life, but, you know, it's definitely been a time of reflecting and growing, and it's been nothing but excitement, man. Just watching my daughters grow up and come along as they're advancing and watching their personalities grow has been definitely enjoyable. And finding my way through the business world, just making sure that I'm making the correct connections and staying connected to the people that I've already been connected to, you know, just to continue to try to give myself an opportunity to continue to advance and not be complacent with what I've already accomplished.
That's outstanding. So take us through. Here's a guy coming out of Tiffin College, and you're an undrafted guy, and here you are in the big, bad NFL world trying to make the Pittsburgh Steelers. And so there's guys like your story right now here in town at the Titans training camp and training camps all around the league that are trying to make an impression. What is that like? Just take us back to, I guess, what was it, 2005 for you and trying to make an impression for the Pittsburgh Steelers and just trying to get somebody to notice your abilities?
I mean, well, it was a roller coaster ride for me personally, you know, speaking for the personal situation that I went to, because as you stated, I went to a smaller school in Tiffin University. And to be honest with you, as much as I believed in myself, you know, as much as I believed in, you know, my ability to play football, the reality of it was I was always a realist. I felt like, you know, I'd never wanted to get my hopes too high in a situation where I felt like it wasn't unaccomplishable. And I felt like it was, you know, the opportunity and the tryout with the NFL, as much as I was excited about it at the first part of it, you know, I was reflecting on it at the time, and I just felt like it was a long shot. And, you know, I went through a journey of questioning whether I should be there, to wanting the desire to have more opportunities in practice to showcase my skills and my talent. And it was an emotional part where that, you know, some days I was confident and some days I definitely questioned my presence. You know, I remember calling my mother on different occasions from my dorm room, just stressing and some nights crying about, you know, maybe not getting the opportunity the other guys were getting in practice, feeling like I was being overlooked, feeling like I was just being brought in as a body to have on the field. My mother, I definitely remember vividly, my mother just kept reminding me, like, you know, what God has for you is for you. You don't know who's watching you. I don't care if you stand on the sideline. You stand there with confidence. You stand there with your chest high. I mean, your head high and your chest out, that know that, you know, your journey is already becoming something that you weren't expecting anyway. So you just have to grasp every moment that you possibly can and take it for what it's worth, you know. And every time I got an opportunity, whether it was, you know, a practice rep or it was actually a special teams play in a preseason game, it didn't matter what it was. Whatever it was that they asked me to do, I was going to make sure that I gave 110%. And that's all I can, you know, control. You know, a coach of mine at the time just continue to harp on us, you know, don't count the numbers. You control what you can control, and when your opportunity is there, then you seize it, and we'll go from there, and everything else will work itself out. And that's just where I was at with you. You know, I had let go of the emotions of not being noticed around the time of mid-training camp that came around, and I just was focused on making sure that I was making plays in practice and in the preseason games that we had, that it didn't matter. You know, whatever outcome it came to, you know, I was going to make it tough on them and let me go.
I know in our conversations we've had Chris Sanders on the show and others that just talk about there's that one or two, there's a couple people, especially early on, that help them, right? Whether it's a coach or a player. Who was that for you, Nate, at the very beginning stages, like what you're talking about?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I could probably go down a list of guys and priorities of who helped me. But the overall aspect of it that I tell a lot of people is the Pittsburgh Steelers organization kind of just saved my whole career. They gave me the opportunity because it wasn't one guy in that building that was more, you know, into making sure that he was looking after the younger guys than anybody else. You know, every guy, every veteran, every leader from Coach Cowher on down, from Mr. Rooney, you know, I'll never forget one time when we ran the AFC Championship my rookie year, and I went up to Mr. Rooney at the time, you know, and I just knew I was an undrafted free agent rookie. I knew he didn't really probably know me like that. And I went to him in the locker room, and I told him, you know, Mr. Rooney, I really appreciate this opportunity. You know, I know, you know, you probably don't know me like that, but I just wanted to come and tell you thank you, man, because this is far beyond my dreams to be in this position right now, to be in this brotherhood, in this locker room. And he looked up at me and was like, Nate, well, what are you talking about? You're the future. You know, we have you here for a reason. I know exactly who you are. But that's just what type of organization it was. It wasn't one guy that was, you know, dominant and making sure he was looking over me and my career on and off the field. It was a brotherhood in the locker room. Each and every one of those guys that were older than me held me accountable, from Jerome Bettis to Hines Ward in my room to Charlie Batch making sure I had a place to go stay during holidays and have a meal. And, you know, it was just so many guys that were heavy aspects of my life and making sure not only was I becoming a good football player, but becoming an even better man, that, you know, I'll be remorse to sit here and just name one guy. It was the Pittsburgh Steelers, the organization in itself. They made sure that I had a career and not just a job for that year.
We're talking a former Steeler, former Titan, Nate Washington. And, Nate, I love hearing people articulate what goes into a successful team and in a successful organization. I think there's a lot of good vibes around here that the Titans the last few years have made big strides in that area as they've come out of the hole that they were in. I mean, they hit a low point a couple of years ago. But are you seeing some of the same things in their daily operations that kind of have you saying, okay, this is a team that's got their act together?
Well, one of the major things that was a huge wake-up call for me when I left Pittsburgh and I actually joined the Tennessee Titans organization was, you know, no offense, but I just felt like the foundation of structure wasn't there yet. You know, the organization was fairly new, even though they had been around since 99. I felt like they didn't have the tradition yet. They didn't have, you know, the foundation of what the organization was going to look like, the discipline, the respect in the community, you know, what it was going to, I didn't feel like it was there yet. And I understood that even being a part of that team at the time, you know, there was going to be some growing pains in that, finding the foundation of what they wanted their organization to be as the Tennessee Titans, as of something I just left in the Pittsburgh Steelers. I noticed that was a huge factor in us being successful in Pittsburgh, because once you come into that organization, you know you're coming into a blue-collar, hard-working, you know, do whatever you have to do for the team, physical football team. You know that when you're getting that with the Pittsburgh Steelers, with every generation that they've had. And I just feel like at a time, the Tennessee Titans, we didn't have that yet. But here it is, we've come to 2020, and I think they found that foundation. And it started from the head. You know, Miss Amy, the owner, has done an amazing job of coming in and showing her presence, not only in that organization, but in the community, to show them that it's a new day and a new era of Titans football. And I think it's just trickled down from there. She went and got Mr. John Robinson, and he's doing an amazing job. I feel like as a GM, he's not only, you know, putting together the pieces that this team is going to need to be successful and go forward with their quest of a Lombardi, but he's also creating the environment with Mike Vrabel, with the energy that we see not only as fans, but I'm pretty sure you all see as the media, incorporating yourself every day with them, to see that the foundation is there of a family that is going to work hard every day and do whatever they have to do to make sure that they get to the final conquest of winning that Lombardi. And then you go to Mike Vrabel, one of the, you know, premier guys of our league at the time, even when he was playing, to have respect of a hardworking guy that was also going to be able to come in and relate to the locker room. And when you have a guy like that, as I've done other interviews and spoke about Coach Vrabel and his connection to the team, it's a huge asset. You know, you got guys out there that will work harder for a guy that they consider a brother and not a dad. I don't know if that, you know, makes any sense, but in all respect, you know, Coach Vrabel is like that big brother that cares about you, that's going to discipline you, but also that's going to have fun with you. He's not the dad, the disciplinarian, that's always going to harp on you and make sure that you're always just acknowledging the negative aspect of your game. I believe in Coach Vrabel. I believe he has what it takes to get the best out of these guys. And as you stated, you know, we can see the structure begin with the foundation of this organization turn around and be strong for what could possibly be the future. And I think the sky's the limit.
Nate Washington is with us. Nate, we just spent a pretty good amount of time in the last hour discussing what's next for Leonard Fournette. What do you think is going through his mind? A productive player, still only 25, 26 years old. I'm sure he feels like he's got a lot left, and he just got cut from a place that, as you were just talking about, right now they seem to be missing that in Jacksonville, that foundation you've been talking about. What do you think is on his mind, and what's next for him?
You know, speaking in the player aspect of it, I'm pretty sure there's probably a slew of things that's running through his mind, from disappointment to happiness, you know, in all honesty, to, you know, misunderstanding, to not really having the clarity that you need in this situation. So I think it's, you know, he's probably going through a slew of things. I'm pretty sure that, in all honesty, he's happy to be out of the dysfunction. I'm pretty sure he's happy to have a new clean slate and the opportunity to actually go compete on the top level with the organization that seems to care about, you know, what they have going in their future. Not to say that Jacksonville doesn't, but it's obvious they're in the rebuilding stage of whatever they're trying to accomplish. And but I'm, at all that being said, I'm pretty sure that there's also some anger, you know, feeling like he's been used, feeling like he was underappreciated, feeling like, you know, they did him wrong. You know, I'm, as a player, you know, I think a lot of times people will feel like we just go out and we just play the game and, you know, we make our money and that's the only thing that we care about. But in the same respect, you know, you want to be feel wanted by your organization. You want to feel wanted by your community. You want to feel wanted by the people that you feel like you're going out and playing for, which is the logo that you wear on your helmet, the fan base, you know, and the organization. And when you feel like those things aren't being accomplished, then I'm pretty sure, you know, as much happiness as you can hope for a new beginning, you also have to feel some type of disrespect and anger. So I'm pretty sure it's probably a slew of things going on. I'm pretty sure also he will find his way back. I think Leonard Fournette, you know, is one of, you know, the best backs in the league. You know, I wouldn't put him in top three, but I would definitely put him in my top 7 to 10. I think he has definitely an amazing upside with his youth and his ability right now. So I'm pretty sure he'll land on his feet, but it's going to be a wake-up call. You know, you can't – I think we all acknowledge these guys on these teams, the franchise players and the superstars and the Pro Bowlers. But at any given moment, you know, with the wrong organization, we see it doesn't matter who you are. You know, anybody can go at any time, and these organizations will do whatever they have to do in their opinion to make their team better.
Nate Washington is with us, former Titans wide receiver. And did you guys know that Nate actually has played for every head coach in Titans history? Jeff Fisher, Mike Munchak, Kim Wisenhunt as head coaches. Mularkey was a position coach. And Vrabel was a defensive coach when he was in Houston. I think you're the only player that has that distinction, actually, which we discovered when we did that Facebook Live
impressive.
Together. Yeah, it's pretty cool. So when you guys won the Super – and I know you were a rookie and breaking in 2005 – but the Steelers won the Super Bowl that year. And then 2008, you won the Super Bowl, and then you came here after the Titans had won the division, had the best record in the league, and got knocked out by Baltimore. In both of those instances, what was the conversation like early in camp with the team as a whole of, all right, we accomplished a lot last year, but that's last year. We now have to focus on this year. And I bring that up because of the Titans going to the AFC title game. They want to build on that. But they also have to recognize that they have to start over, start from scratch, and do it all over again.
Well, to be honest with you, we had, like I said, one of the best things that we had about Pittsburgh was our locker room, the guys that we had. You know, for 05 was Jerome Bettis, and, you know, our defensive leaders were Jory Porter and Troy Polamalu, and, well, although he didn't say much, but these are the leaders that we had. And even in 08, we had guys like James Ferrier on the defense. We had Ben Roethlisberger that was a veteran and a leader at the time. Hines was still a leader. You know, we had so much veteran leadership that it wasn't much being said about the previous year. We already understood. You know, we understood coming back to training camp what needed to be done. And the only thing that we harped on with each other over those times were just making sure we seized every single day. We didn't want to reflect even on yesterday, let alone the previous year of what we had accomplished, because we knew tomorrow was coming. And in order for tomorrow to come and be prepared, we had to make sure that we focused on those days and those days alone. So when those training camps came around that, you know, we may have came up short the previous year, and we felt like, you know, the next year may have been our year. We just came in with the hunger that every day we were going to get better. Every day we were going to compete. Every day practice was going to be like a game. And that mindset set and that stability throughout the season, throughout, you know, having good games, throughout having bad games, kept us focused on what happened the previous year without having to even state it. We knew, you know, where we came up short. Actually, in I want to say the 05 Super Bowl, we barely got in the playoffs. We were the sixth seed. You know, we got in on the last game of the season, and we played every playoff game on the road that year. So it wasn't a factor of knowing that, you know, just because they had came off a 13-3 year in Pittsburgh in 04, that 05 was going to be our road to the Super Bowl. The season was still a test of time. the season was still a roller coaster, and we had to do what we had to do to make sure we got in the playoffs. But once we got in the playoffs, we knew that we had what it took. We knew that the focus was there. We knew that our ability could give us a strong opportunity to win a Lombardi if we seized every day that we were supposed to seize. And that's what you have to do. You have to come in focused with the opportunity to look forward and not back.
Nate Washington, co-host of Nate and TD Fridays at 6. But you and I are also going to be doing a Facebook Live after every Titans game. So looking forward to that we can get your instant analysis on what you see out of the Tennessee Titans. So that's going to be a lot of fun coming up here in just a couple weeks.
Chase, man, I can't wait for that. I think that's going to be amazing. I appreciate the opportunity always to chat with you, buddy. It's awesome. And we definitely going to break some of this Titans football down. I can't wait, man. I can't wait to see this offense evolve. I can't wait to see this fast and young defense continue to mature. I can't wait to see what our corners are going to do. You know, I think this is going to be an exciting year for Titan football.
Well, I agree with you, and I'm looking forward to it. Happy belated birthday, and we will talk to you again soon.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it. Thanks for the time.
Nate Washington, Tiffin University's finest and former Titans, Steelers, and Texans wide receiver here with us. We'll have more coming. Darren Donican, Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
We appreciate Nate Washington for joining us on our phone line, which is driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Good stuff from Nate Washington. Don't forget Nate and TD this Friday at 6 p.m. right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good stuff from him. It's been a while since we've talked to Nate. Nate was one of those pieces that was, as the Titans were trying to rebuild and get guys with experience, because that's something they had. Floyd Reese did a really good job of that, bringing in those guys from winning cultures, and he was one of those pieces to kind of get them. Unfortunately, you know, they didn't have a ton of success when he was here, or really any success. In fact, I'm trying to think. They didn't play when he was here. I don't think they were – no, they never had a playoff appearance.
It was unfortunate because he came in after the Titans had had a really good year, right? They had beaten the Steelers, who ended up winning the Super Bowl, to get the home field advantage, and we know what happened. They lost that game to the Ravens, where they fumbled three times, and they, you know, the play clock ran out, and Flacco made the play. You know, they had the nightmare, one of two nightmares they had against the Ravens. And then they brought in Nate Washington the next year, and the wheels fell off. Right, you had CJ2K had the 2,000-yard year, but they got off to the awful start, right? And they just couldn't climb out of that hole. So, unfortunately for Nate Washington, he got to play a lot more. He became a starter in the league for the Titans for a long time, but the teams weren't very good.
Yeah,
and
so
they were sort of on the downslide, the end of the Jeff Fisher era, and the, you know, the ownership issues. It just was not a good time.
8-8, 6-10, 9-7. 6-10, 7-9, 2-14, 3-13. Well, I guess 2-14 was his last year, but that's what he experienced during his time here.
Had 1,000 yards the year that they the year we talked about yesterday. Some the 9-7 year where they lost to the Colts.
Yeah,
the Matt Hasselbeck year,
the 2011 year.
Yeah, 1,000 yards that season.
Yes, he did.
He had a really good season. Yeah. Do you remember that Monday night? I was going to ask you guys. Did you guys – I was hoping he wouldn't say the quarterback's name just because – I mean, I wanted to see if you guys – did you remember that it was Mettenberger?
Yeah, I think I might have – was that here?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was here. Cold. It was cold.
Yeah, I was at that game then. I was at that game.
Yes, you were at that game. You were, because I remember. I remember who you were walking around with, so I'll tell you that off air. Yeah. You were there. It was cold that night. In fact, I remember, I don't think I was feeling well, and I think I went home early. Because that was not, it was, I just remember being, because I remember the walk to the car. But yeah, he had that big touchdown, the 80-yard touchdown before the half, and they end up losing a close one to Pittsburgh. But that team was not good. His last year here was, what, that was the 2-14 season, the 2014 year? Yeah, they only had... two went. That was the Wizenator, right?
Yep.
Yeah, they would. We know they would win opening day. They would win the first game of the season under the Wiz, and then they had troubles with the next 15. So their only wins that year were Kansas City at Arrowhead to start the season, and then they beat Jacksonville here. So that was it.
I just think it's interesting because he and I did at some point during quarantine, we did one of our game night Facebook Lives, and Teron, actually it was our first one. Teron was a part of it too. And as we were talking and I had his stats and everything pulled up, it dawned on me. I was like, he played for every Titans head coach in some capacity. I mean, they were, you know, Vrabel and Malarkey were assistants and not his position group, but they were on the staff. And so I thought that was funny. But Wisenhunt was actually his OC his first couple of years in Pittsburgh before he went to Arizona. So he had a couple of stints with Wisenhunt, and OC Wisenhunt wasn't bad. Head coach Wisenhunt,
yeah.
Though.
Well, they had a lot of wins. I mean, he played against Ken Wisenhunt in the Super Bowl, right? Ken Wisenhunt was the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals in that Super Bowl that the Steelers won. I thought it was really good insight. Interesting, his thoughts of his experience in Pittsburgh, you know, what made them successful. And he cited a lot of examples. I thought that was a great story about Rooney.
I know.
Right? I walk up to the owner. Does he really know who I am? Just some practice squad guy. And he knew exactly who he was. He said, you know, we see something in you, Nate. So I think that says a lot. And quite honestly, he said it flatly. They didn't have that here for those years. They were searching for it. They couldn't find it, but he sees a lot of the foundation now. I think that's really good perspective. It's a good window into what I think is going on over there. Because I have the same feeling. I thought they were missing something for a long time over there, but I really like their chemistry and how they go about things these days. And I think you're going to see it on the field. I could be wrong, but I think that's going to be worth something in those close games. I think they're getting better and better at the details that you need to be successful with all the close games that you're going to play.
That Rooney story did stand out to me, too.
He's got some good Pittsburgh stories.
And what he said is what we've been talking about, you know, what we talked about for years on this show about when he first got here, right? I mean, he said exactly what we were saying almost every day on the show about the Titans organization at the time. You know, here he is coming from Pittsburgh, and he comes here, and, you know, as especially about in the middle of his stint here, it's when it started becoming kind of the rudderless ship, right? It was like, okay, now what? What's going on here? Where's this going? And he saw that too, and so obviously we talked about just the other day, things have gotten a whole lot better here when it comes to that. And now they have, you know, they've got real structure. They've got people you know that are in charge. I think there's more room to grow. I think they can even get better. But, man, it has come a long ways. I mean, they've got a solid general manager. They look like they have a solid head coach. Everybody praises those hires and, you know, thinks that they have got the right people in place. It seems that has been the case. The body of work shows that. They've got someone that stood up and said, okay, I'm in charge. They've done things. They're constantly doing things, which they weren't before. And so, you know, I still think, and there's been some new hires over there, and I think that could be a good thing. We'll see. We still haven't had a chance to talk to them, know what their philosophies are, what they think, what, you know, community-wise, being visible, is that something they value, they care about, what have you. Still haven't. We know there's some new hires over there, but haven't had a chance to really interact with them yet, but maybe that'll be also a good thing moving forward. Just as we talked about, Steve Underwood was an attorney. I mean, he made a lot of money working for the Adams family and did a great job, but he's a behind-the-scenes guy. And behind the scenes guy only. He is not an out in the public guy.
Right.
He's just not.
And I've talked to a few people that know Burke Nihil, the new president, and speak highly of him. Now, like you said, we haven't had the opportunity to do that on our own. And I hope that we will once things are a little more back to normal or whatever normal is going to be. But It was interesting to hear Nate say what he said about when he first got here, but then to see the evolution, and we were talking about this some yesterday, that Amy had to grow into that role. It was like, all right, you're going to be the controlling owner because this Tommy Smith thing hasn't worked out. So she, you know, brought back, you know, Steve Underwood came back because that was familiar and he knew the lay of the land and helped that transition, but she's grown into the role on her own. Is it perfect? No. And we pointed that out, but I don't think anything really is. And now there is that, there's a culture, and you know, we were talking about Leonard Fournette. John Robinson always says team first. That's what we want. So he's established that part of the football side. Vrabel's come in and established, you know, what he wants as the head coach and can build upon that in year three. So the things that weren't there that we were unsure of, what is this? You like to use the phrase Darren Rudderless ship is, you know, that's what it was. Now it has direction, and you know, we're seeing the fruits of that. They're improving the facility. They did the locker room a few years ago. They're building on to it now. So it's good to see that they're growing into a more respectable program in the NFL.
We'll come back. We'll discuss a little bit on the hockey side. We'll get into that to close out hour number two. Vince Ferrara coming up at high noon today. We had to move him to today as opposed to yesterday. So we'll talk to Vince. We'll head east and talk to him at noon. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Return to...
So I said at the beginning of the show, I was watching the Bruins and Lightning battle it out. Two overtimes. Lightning get it done. Victor Hedman. And a body in front. Imagine that. Maroon in front making life very, very difficult for Halak. And that would be the game winner in the second overtime. And the Lightning eliminate the Bruins. And they will advance to the Eastern Conference Final. The reason I bring that up is that the end of Zdeno Chara in Boston. Have we seen the last game for him in a Bruins uniform? And have we seen the last game of him, period? What do you guys think?
He's what, 65 somewhere?
No, I don't think he's in his 60s yet.
What, he's 43?
Late 50s?
Late 50s. Well,
I mean, he's such a freak of nature that he could probably still play just because of how he plays. You know, it's not like he's got to speed up and down the ice. He is 43.
He'd be 44 next year during the season. He would turn 44 during the season.
I think if he wants to play, he could probably be effective. His role might diminish some. But that's a really interesting question. To me, the other thing that I thought about a lot during this series, the Lightning beat the Bruins, who are a great team. Say what you want, you know, as much as they're a team you kind of love to hate because of Marchand and those guys, but they're a great team. The Lightning beat them without Steven Stamkos.
Yep.
Their captain, superstar player, highest paid player, I think. And they lose Kucherov at the beginning
very
of the
early,
game last night.
Very early, yep.
And they still find a way to win. And you mentioned Patrick Maroon. I think that's a team that, I mean, first of all, they have oodles of talent. They have ridiculous amounts of talent. But they were smart enough to figure out the pieces they need. They needed a little more Patrick Maroon, right? He's not the only guy they picked up. They got a couple of guys.
Why?
Paquette's the guy that they've had for a while. Sorelli's the guy they've developed. But they've gotten a little more toughness. They were able to match the physicality, the bullies that the Boston kind of plays with.
Oh, right? Wait a minute. Did you just say they got tougher in the offseason? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Yeah.
They got tougher.
Yep.
They found the right element. In fact, a couple years ago, I thought when the Predators went and got Wayne Simmonds and Brian Boyle, which was the right idea, right? Unfortunately, it didn't develop. Boyle was useful, right? Simmonds never was right, never found himself. But that's the idea that they had. And on that day when they acquired those guys, I was really excited because I thought they got exactly what they needed. But Maroon was a guy that I think we all sort of identified at the time as a guy that could help there. Who ended up getting Maroon the next year? The Blues.
Blues.
He helped them. They won the Cup.
Yeah.
And where does he go from there? He goes to Tampa. And now Tampa's got a great chance. You know, this is a huge opportunity for them. Yeah, so he'll might be out there again.
I mean, he definitely fits the mold of what we've been talking about, of that guy that can – I mean, he's got some skill, but he's got some grit too. He can get under your skin. So I know that let's see, he had 23 points this year. I mean, you're not asking for a ton out of a guy like that, but you know, he's somebody that if he's who knows what it's going to look like with the offseason, but he's only on a one-year deal, so maybe he's somebody they kick the tires on.
But it's also a value beyond the points you get in the regular season. It's it becomes a different deal in the playoffs, right? That value is increased. Those things that Ryan Reeves brings you, right? Those things are more valuable in a playoff run.
Look, I'm with you. I don't, and people, if they've listened to the show, I don't ever fault if it doesn't work out, because you're right. The intentions were the right. That's exactly what they were looking for with Simmons and Boyle. And I bring that up because I know a lot of times the failures are brought up of a general manager, and I say, no, wait a minute. Yeah, today when you look at it, it didn't work. So, okay, you can identify that. But guess what? Somebody has to pull the trigger and take the chance. It's a gamble. They're always getting some work and some don't. At the time, it was highly praised. It seemed like it was the right move. So you can't turn around and years later say, what were they thinking? Or was David Poile thinking? Like, you can't do that. Like, that we can all do that. I mean, who can't identify something years later? I mean, that's pretty easy to do. What, hindsight, once we've seen it all play out, well, yeah, sure, everybody's a really good GM when that happens. But at the time, it's like the whole Peter Forsberg. And I know Willie and I get a little bit tired because, and we bring it up because it was a thing. Like afterwards, you can't bring up, you should have never. It was the right thing to do at the time. It did not work out. Those deals happen. It doesn't work out. I don't know why. I can't explain it. And then there's deals that do, and you hit home runs on them. But the point is, they've got to find these guys. And I know it's not easy, but they've got to find the day we got on here on that Monday after they were unfortunately eliminated by Arizona. I feel just as passionate about it today as I did right after they were eliminated. They've got to, and I know it's not easy, but they've got to find a way to get a guy or two like that, at least one. I know it's hard. I know. But you got to get the 40 grit sandpaper. I mean, I've watched Maroon. Look what he does. He stands right in front of Halak. Halak had no clue where the puck was because Maroon is all over him. They've got to get guys that are willing to stick their nose in the dirty areas and do the work that nobody wants to do and get their bodies beat on and banged
dirty
on.
Work.
Yes, they got to do that. They've got to find those guys. They are missing that ingredient. They have got to get guys that their favorite thing to do is hang around the net, because that's exactly what you just said, Willie, and I knew that was it's true. And Colorado's tried to do that too, and we'll see if they can find a way to. Maybe last night was the beginning of something. It was a response. Boy, you talking about coming out with a sledgehammer in the first period, and that's what they did. But you got to get those guys, and I know that probably everybody's looking for them, but they've got to find a way to get one or two of those guys on this roster. I feel just as good about it today as I did back when we first had that discussion.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Did you bring up the Chara thing just because this may be it, or is that something you'd like to possibly visit?
Oh,
here?
I don't think he plays for another team. I don't see that. I don't see him putting on another uniform. It's just like
he's only played for what, three?
We had the whole. I mean, how long has he been in Boston now?
Since like 2005, something like that. I know he was with the Islanders early in his career, and then there was one other team in between.
Ottawa.
That's it. But yeah, he's been in Boston. I mean,
it's like I feel Boston. The same about him as I every time we bring up Joe Thornton, and I'm like, he's not going to play for anybody else. I don't see it. Like, I just think he'll retire a Shark. I don't see, there's just certain guys I don't see them putting on. It's like, you know, people with Pekka, like Pekka's not going to wear another uniform. It's going to be a Predators uniform, and that's it. Like, he will not just hang around and put on another uniform. That's just my opinion. There's just certain guys I just don't see them playing for another team.
I mean?
As painful it would be, they would probably hang it up before they would just go search out another team at the end of their career. And I don't see that from Char.
I think you're probably right. I think this is also going to spark a discussion. Like the Bruins, they came within one game of winning the whole thing last year. They're out in the second round. So how do they go about it going forward? I'm sure there's extreme disappointment. Somebody had to lose that series. You asked the question before the series, Darren. What if Tampa loses the series? You know, how does John Cooper look? Well, I mean, they come out passing with flying colors, and now there's a great opportunity for them. Boston, I look at them, I think they're just as good as they've been, but Chara's going to be a year older. Bergeron's going to be a year older. You know, it's such a delicate thing, right, to stay on top in that window that we talk about all the time with the Predators. There's a lot of question, are the Predators still in the window, or do they need to, you know, open up a different window, you know, try it a little bit of a different way to get back into the window, or do they have to take a step back to take a couple of steps forward? It's a really tough thing in the salary cap. I just used Boston as an example. I'm sure they're extremely disappointed, but they lost to a great team. But I'm sure there's a lot of people in Boston saying, you couldn't beat Tampa without Stamkos, and then Kucherov goes down, you can't win another game and get to the next game. You know, I'm sure there'll be a lot of talk about not having Rask. What effect did that have?
Yeah,
but
I mean,
Halak
sure.
played
I
pretty
mean,
gotta, well, though. Yeah. Halak
did,
played a pretty darn good.
You have to factor
serious.
That in.
He's not Tuukka Rask.
I mean, Rask is going to most likely win the Vezina. So, I think you have to... You definitely have to consider that, but
well, it would be him or the goalie we saw win the series. I mean, right?
Yeah,
sure. But you know that rational thought doesn't always come in to the fans in Boston or any crazy
fans. I was about to say, yeah, fans. Period.
Yeah,
right. Doesn't. But and to your point on Pekka playing, like I agree with you. He's not going to go. You know, there are some guys that are just for life, and maybe. You know, if next year doesn't go the way that, you know, if it's looking like they're going to miss the playoffs, does David approach him at the deadline and say, do you want me to send you to try and get you a cup? Maybe that's a conversation, but I still say Pekka he's pred for life, and he's, you know, he's not going to be that guy. So there's just certain – that's the only – you brought up Chara. I didn't think you meant that, but I wanted to see where – you know, if that was a discussion, because I mean,
why do you think so?
No, I even though that's the type of guy I would love to have, you know, with like a Dante Fabbro, you know, to pick his brain of he's been around, he's won cups, he's so well respected in the league that instantly makes your locker room stronger. But he's also 43, and this team doesn't need to get older. This team needs to get younger. So. I just was curious if you brought that up for that reason or just making the comment.
Well, let's look at a different team too. The St. Louis Blues, the defending champions, they're out in the quote unquote first round. And so what is their number one decision they have to make now? What's their number one priority?
St. Louis?
Yeah.
Get Tarasenko healthy.
Well, there's one. Okay, I'll grant Petrangelo. You that. That's Petrangelo, right? Yeah. It's been sitting there the whole year. Imagine if Roman Josi were sitting there right now unsigned and the craziness we'd be going through right now.
Ugh.
That's what's happened with Petrangelo.
Yep.
They never got it done. So what happens? I mean, their team takes on a pretty different look if you don't have him. I got to feel like they'll find a way to do it, but... My theme of the segment here is it's a tough thing to stay on top. They had everything go right. They go from last place to the dream championship, out in the first round the next year, and then major issues going forward with Tarasenko and their captain. That's a really tricky one. I'd love to know what's going on in their world right now. And let's go to Colorado, right? They had a great year. They're dynamic, but there was still one game from elimination. Now, last night, I think I said it on the show. I mean, they could come out and win 5-0. I didn't think they'd be up 5-0 in the first, but Ben Bishop didn't have it. A guy named Michael Hutchinson did the job last night. And they're still alive, but can they beat them two more times? It's crazy, though. Maybe this is Dallas's year to go all the way. I don't know if I would have thought that, even on January 1st. We're thinking Dallas will be one game from the conference final sitting here today. They don't strike me as a great team, but they're a team that's playing great for the most part, other than last night. And I wonder what that will do to them, what will happen in the next game. That series has been crazy.
It's not playing out the way we thought it would. That's for sure.
It's just not an exact science. The whole thing is not an exact science, and there's so little difference between advancing and going out in the first round or not making the playoffs. There's just not that much that separates the great teams from the good teams from the mediocre teams.
Two more teams facing elimination tonight, and that'll be, can Philadelphia keep their series alive, and can Vancouver keep their series alive? So the Golden Knights and Islanders looking to punch their tickets into the conference finals, and we'll see if they can do that tonight. 6 o'clock will be Islanders and Flyers. That will be on, both of them will be on NBC Sports Network, and then the nightcap will be around 8:45 for Vegas and Vancouver. We'll come back. We'll head east. We'll chat with Vince Ferrara, WNML, the sports animal there in Knoxville. We'll do that next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.